uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you on a sad day for America. A happy 1st of August, first of all. Greetings to you, but a sad and tragic day for the United States. The right-wing spin, of course, went out immediately. All of the talk show hosts all across the United States within the last 15 minutes, or the last hour, I suppose, have received the same email I did. And I quote, John Bolton deserved an up or down vote in the United States Senate, something Democrats who are beholden to Kofi Annan refuse to give him. Given the lack of political integrity on Capitol Hill, the president did the right thing in making this recess appointment. And while the left has obstructed the appointment of Bolton as U.N. ambassador, more corruption has surfaced in the oil for food scandal. Kofi Annan has been playing footsies with Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe. There has been no accountability in peacekeeping scandals, and reminiscent of FDR, Kofi Annan is trying to neutralize the United States by packing the Security Council. Clearly, some adult supervision is needed at the UN right now, and John Bolton is the right man for the job. Yeah. The right-wing talking points for the day. On the other hand, I think maybe we should listen to Republican United States Senator George Voinovich.
We're going to vote tomorrow. And I'm afraid that when we go to the well, that too many of my colleagues are not going to understand that this appointment is very, very important to our country. At a strategic time when we need friends all over the world, we need somebody up there that's going to be able to get the job done. And I know some of my friends say, don't let it go, George, it's going to work out. I don't want to take the risk. I came back here and ran for a second term. Because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time. And before they get to this well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations. I yield the floor.
Yeah, I yield the floor. Bush's hatchet man, former Undersecretary of State John Bolton. By the way, if you have thoughts or comments on this or any other topic, I mean, there's other things we're going to talk about today we'll get to, but this certainly has led the news cycle, as they say. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Toll free across the United States. Outside the United States, 503-248-0620. And if you want to drop into our live chat room, just go to tomhartman.com and click on live chat up at the top. Now, what's the significance of this? What is the story behind the story here that is not being told? In my opinion, there are a couple. There are the obvious story behind the stories with regard to John Bolton. These are the obvious ones, the ones that people think are the things that caused George Voinovich, the Republican from Ohio, to cry in front of the United States Senate as he begged his colleagues not to vote for John Bolton. And in fact, Voinovich was successful. There were not enough votes to break a filibuster in the United States Senate. He wasn't merely pleading to his Republican colleagues. He was appealing to all of his colleagues in the United States Senate, and he was successful in doing that. And in fact, in all probability, Voinovich is considered a man of some integrity. If he had come out in favor of Bolton, he would probably be U.N. ambassador, but would have been before today. So there's the obvious secret stuff, right? The speculation that the papers that are being withheld by the White House, that John Kerry and Teddy Kennedy and the other, you know, perhaps less visible and less obviously partisan Democrats wanted so that they could, and some Republicans as well, wanted so that they could evaluate John Bolton's honesty before the Senate in answering questions and past behavior, that some of those papers that the White House is covering up and stonewalling have to do with either John Bolton being involved in the political assassination of Joe Wilson by taking down an entire CIA covert operation, and Joe Wilson's wife, Valerie Plame Wilson, in the process, that he may be involved in that. There's considerable and growing evidence in this. And, or, that the smoking gun that the White House is trying to hide by refusing to release the documents to the United States Senate. And by the way, let's be very clear. United States senators all have security clearances. They are routinely, particularly the committee heads, they are routinely given access to the most secret and sensitive documents in the world. And the White House saying, no, sorry, senators, you can't see this. So the second theory, and obviously the more plausible one, because this is, you know, this guy was in it up to his eyebrows, is that the White House is covering up John Bolton's involvement with the intentional manipulation of intelligence data and the intentional manufacturing of lies, specifically the lie about the uranium in Niger, that George Bush used to beat us over the head and say, you know, look out, the nuclear bomb is coming any day now. It's on its way. The nuclear cloud. Remember this?
The evidence indicates that Iraq is reconstituting its nuclear weapons program. Saddam Hussein has held numerous meetings with Iraqi nuclear scientists, a group he calls his nuclear mujahideen, his nuclear holy warriors, facing clear evidence of peril. We cannot wait for the final proof, the smoking gun. It could come in the form of a mushroom cloud.
And it was John Bolton who provided some of that information and who participated in cherry-picking that intelligence and backing that up. And we know that. We just don't know how deep he was in it. We don't know how much of a cover-up he was involved in. We don't know if he was the puppet master or if he was Pinocchio. We, you know, and this stuff hasn't been, you know, was he working for at the behest of Dick Cheney, or was Dick Cheney being, you know, the victim of intelligence and what was going on? We don't know. The Senate wanted to know. We're not going to know. So everybody's assuming that the reason why John Bolton would be a bad choice for United Nations ambassador. Everybody's assuming that the reason why he'd be a bad choice is one of those two reasons. That he's basically, you know, a crook or a liar. That he's a war criminal. That he was involved in getting us into an illegal war in Iraq that led to the death of 1,800 Americans, that led to the dismemberment and disfiguring of tens of thousands more, that led to the loss of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars of our national treasure, and that led to the death of 100,000 Iraqis and the devastation of that country, the destabilizing of the Middle East, turning the entire world against the United States, making us a pariah nation, that John Bolton played some real significant role in that, and perhaps even in the political assassination of those truth-tellers like Joe Wilson who dared speak up and speak out. But I'll tell you what I think is the real reason. And it goes a lot deeper than that. I think the real reason that George W. Bush wants John Bolton, so much wants John Bolton in the United Nations, and not just somebody else who's a conservative, but specifically John Bolton, is because he knows that John Bolton can be counted on. He's a go-to guy. John Bolton can be counted on to back up lies that result in the death of other human beings, and he will do it without blinking an eye. That John Bolton can be counted on to back up lies that result in wars that destroy the national interests of the United States, but promote the interests of multinational corporations, oil companies, the Bush family, and the neocons in power. That John Bolton, in fact, himself is one of the neocons who believes in this bizarre worldview that we've got to terrify the world and we have to terrify our own people in order to have a stable society. And that here's the kicker, that John Bolton, as United Nations ambassador, will support the United States preemptively attacking Iran with nuclear weapons. Iran, you say? The United States attacking Iran? Come on, you must be some kind of crackpot, Hartman. The United States attack Iran and John Bolton would stand by and put up with... Well, the American Conservative, the magazine that was originally founded by and is still today edited by, in part, Pat Buchanan, a traditional conservative publication, not a neocon publication, a conservative publication, the American Conservative, in their deep background column, writes a piece. Now, keep in mind, John Bolton's name is not mentioned here. But just think about how this would play out if John Bolton was at the UN versus how this might play out if there was somebody in the UN who was actually a career diplomat, who actually cared about diplomacy, who actually cared about the international community. Here's the article from the American Conservative. In Washington, it is hardly a secret that the same people in and around the administration who brought you Iraq are preparing to do the same for Iran. And now, let me add, by the way, John Bolton is one of those people in and around the administration who brought us Iraq. Back to the American Conservative. The Pentagon, acting under instructions from Vice President Dick Cheney's office, has tasked the United States Strategic Command, STRATCOM, with drawing up a contingency plan to be employed in response to another 9/11-type terrorist attack in the United States. The plan includes a large-scale air assault on Iran, employing both conventional and tactical nuclear weapons. And then here's the real kicker. Because keep in mind, John Bolton was involved in lying us into a war in Iraq, a country that did not threaten us and had not attacked us on 9/11. Had nothing to do with the 9/11 attack and represented no threat to us. Quoting again from the American Conservative, as in the case of Iraq, the response, that is the nuclear attack against Iran, the response is not conditional on Iran actually being involved in the act of terrorism directed against the United States. Several senior Air Force officers involved in the planning are reportedly appalled at the implications of what they are doing, that Iran is being set up for an unprovoked nuclear attack. But no one is prepared to damage his career by posing any objections. No one is prepared to damage his career. Except occasionally, a Republican statesman will speak out.
And I know some of my friends say, "Don't let it go. George is going to work out. I don't want to take the risk. I came back here and ran for a second term because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time. And before they get to this, well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations." I yield the floor.
20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman, speaking truth to power. We'll be back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. No. Now is the time that we need to get engaged. Now is the time. There is no time for despair, my friends. There's no time for running away. Now is when we have to stand up and speak out. John Bolton is now the United States Ambassador to the United Nations. I think it's really important that Americans understand who this man is, what he has done, and what this administration is up to, because when it happens, We need to be ready to speak out. I mean, you thought that 9/11 was the Reichstag Gebüge, the moment, was the Reichstag fire. I suggested that. You know, the time when the event that would be used by fascists within the Bush administration or neo-fascists to strip us of our civil liberties with the so-called Patriot Act, and start taking apart, systematically taking apart our country. I'm telling you, that's nothing compared to what will happen if there's another attack in the United States of any kind from any source, probably again from Saudi Arabia, and we decide to use nuclear weapons to attack Iran. Because Iran, unlike Iraq, Iran has not been under sanctions all these years. Iran has not been destroyed economically and militarily. We haven't bombed their air force into smithereens like we did Iraq's. There's not an international consensus against them. They have treaties with China and Russia that they intend to honor. I mean, this is a scary time. There's a reason why George Voinovich was crying before the United States Senate. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Bennett in Newburgh, New York. Hey, Bennett, what are your thoughts?
Well, we do have to stand up, but we shouldn't stand up in our living rooms. It's time to stand up on the streets. It's time to take to the streets. And I'm just calling to tell everybody that a fine time to do that is September 24th in Washington, D.C. There's an impeach Bush rally that's going to be, I hope, attended by millions. And if people just simply stand up in their living room and yell and curse at the TV, as I do reflexively about eight times a day, we're not quite doing enough. You mentioned that even conservatives now are starting to catch on, and Buchanan's article was one example. Actually, Buchanan wrote another article recently giving light to the rationale about if we fight them over there, we want to fight them over here.
He wrote an entire book about that called Where the Right Went Wrong that I read.
Yep.
I actually read that book this about 6 months ago in this winter. And other than the last chapter of the book where he lapses back into Republican partisan polemics, it's a pretty good book. And it lays out the crimes and lies of the Bush administration and does so in the context of the damage that they're doing to the national interest of the United States, which really surprised me. But it's, I got to say, in fact, I had a discussion with Mark Carlin of BuzzFlash because I do a recommended book every month for them. And I said, I'm thinking that maybe we should tell people to read Pat Buchanan's book. And we went through it and we just agreed that the last part of it made it sufficiently toxic and, nonsense that we couldn't really endorse it. But,
may I just say that endorsing that book might not be a terrible idea, and that you could sort of meet conservatives where they are and show them there's a difference between true nationalistic conservatism and jingoistic neoconism. I'm thinking even letting him reread Barry Goldwater. Let him reread an intelligent conservative.
Yeah, year before last, I reread Goldwater's second autobiography, No Regrets.
Okay.
And you get it that he was terrified of the Soviet Union. He believed, and it turns out it was Rumsfeld, actually, was the guy who put together the Committee for the Present Danger in 72 that was terrifying people about weapons of mass destruction that the Soviet Union didn't even have. Saying that the fact that we don't know that they have them is proof that they're there. Goldwater was terrified of those people. But beyond that, I don't want to turn this into a defense of Barry Goldwater because there was a lot wrong with Barry Goldwater.
Sure there was.
But in any case, the point is that I agree with you. We need to be reaching out. We'd absolutely right across the board. But this is something that should concern all Americans.
Well, just real quick, Goldwater was also terrified of the religious right, and he was prescient in that. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But just real quick, September 24th, Washington, D.C., the time is right to take
and the website. That is, Bennett.
ImpeachBush.org is a good one. And one last thought, parents, us old hippie parents, talk to your kids. Your kids are falling asleep.
There you go. Get the word out. Thanks, Bennett. I appreciate it.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Just so you know how corrupt this administration is, how far these guys will go, just take a look at the history, at the record of this guy that George W. Bush just defied the will of the United States Senate to use a clause in the Constitution that was designed for back in the days when you had to ride, sometimes a week or 2 weeks by horseback to get back to the Congress. So that if Congress was in recess, but the president was there in Washington and there was some kind of crisis, the president could deal with it by, an appointment crisis. The president could make an appointment, a recess appointment. Congress goes on recess last week and boom, today, George W. Bush puts John Bolton in as our U.N. ambassador. Bolton was instrumental. This is from the Wikipedia, answers.com, the Wikipedia listing. Bolton was instrumental in derailing a 2001 bioweapons conference in Geneva convened to endorse a UN proposal to enforce the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. U.S. officials led by Bolton argued that the plan would have put U.S. national security at risk by allowing spot inspections of suspected U.S. weapon sites. Although, you know, we then get to inspect everybody else's weapon sites. Despite the fact that the U.S. claims not to have carried out any research for offensive purposes since 1969. The U.S.'s failure to support the plan ensured it would be meaningless, and to this day, because of John Bolton, there is no practical enforcement mechanism against the spread of biological weapons. Now, if there's an outbreak of anthrax or smallpox or something else in some major U.S. city, and that's the 9/11 incident that they're going to, that this administration is going to use to launch an attack on Iran, which has got the fourth, I believe, largest stockpile of oil in the world. You can thank John Bolton, because he derailed the bioweapons conference that would have allowed enforcement of the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention. And then he goes on to say in 2002 that Cuba has biological weapons. He's like trying to promote this. He's got the intelligence analysts say, no, it doesn't. Bolton attempted to have the chief bioweapons analyst in the State Department's Bureau of Intelligence and Research and the CIA's National Intelligence Officer for Latin America reassigned. He tried to fire these guys. Why? Because they wanted to tell the truth. Under oath at his Senate hearings for confirmation as ambassador, he denied trying to have the men fired, but seven intelligence officials contradicted him. And so, did John Bolton commit the felony of lying to Congress? Well, the only way we'll know is if we look at the documentation. And the White House is not going to provide that to the United States Congress, even in secret. In 2002, Bolton is said to have flown to Europe to demand the resignation of José Bustani, the head of the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, and to have orchestrated his removal at a special session of the organization. The United Nations' highest administrative tribunal later condemned John Bolton's action as an unacceptable violation of principles protecting international civil servants. He had been unanimously reelected for a four-year term with strong U.S. support and had been praised by Colin Powell. The New Republic notes he's been very successful in pushing his agenda, although it's not always, you know, he's not always liked by people as a result of it. For example, the New Republic says, quote, Iran's foreign minister. So this is why I think the Bush administration is preparing more war. Four more wars, right? Here you go. They're preparing more war. These guys are in love with war. They've never been in a war. They've never fought a war. They've never actually seen the dead bodies. George Bush goes in for his physical on Friday, and he's there in the hospital. He's got this obligatory photo opportunity to shake hands with an amputee, get his picture taken, but, you know, he's clearly very uncomfortable with it. Cheney, he had, you know, when he could have served in Vietnam, he got five deferments. Well, he had other priorities. John Bolton, other priorities. Richard Feith, other priorities. Wolfowitz, other priorities. But they love war, these guys. These chicken hawks. Iran's foreign ministry. This is the country that Pat Buchanan's Americans Conservative magazine says that the United States is preparing to attack right now if there is any kind of 9/11 style attack inside the United States, to use that as the pretext for attacking Iran, even if Iran has nothing to do with it. Iran's foreign ministry has called John Bolton rude and undiplomatic. Iran's foreign ministry. John Bolton was part of the State Department's delegation to six-party talks on the North Korean nuclear program in 2003. He was removed from the delegation after describing Kim Jong-il as a tyrannical dictator of a country where life is a hellish nightmare. Now, those things are true. I can say them. I'm a talk show host. I'm not the diplomat. And when you're negotiating with another country, no matter how terrible they are, if you want to get what you want, you don't go in and call them names. That's called diplomacy. In response, a North Korean spokesman said, quote, such human scum and bloodsucker is not entitled to take part in the talks, end quote. Speaking of John Bolton. American Democrats argued that Bolton's words at the time were undiplomatic and endangered the talks. Yeah, and now as a result of John Bolton screwing that up, North Korea has nuclear weapons. So if a nuke goes off from North Korea, you could thank John Bolton for that too. It's enough to make you think that these guys actually want to destroy the United States. You know, it's like the Manchurian Candidate. Remember the movie The Manchurian Candidate? There's been a more modern retake of it. And the more modern retake, you know, portrays him as a corporate stooge. The old one, he was a commie stooge. But, you know, if a Manchurian Candidate, Joel Peskoff wrote a great piece for BuzzFlash. It's up there now. You can find it at BuzzFlash.com. If a Manchurian Candidate came into the United States, somebody like maybe George W. Bush, what would he want to do if he wanted to destroy the United States? He'd destroy our long-term economy. He'd disrupt our military power. He would lose prestige for the United States and the world. He'd make the world hate us. Right? That's what you would do if you wanted to destroy the United States. Slash revenues to the federal government by having huge tax cuts, throw the country into deficit, bankrupt the nation, pass tax policies, pass international trade policies that destroy our industrial infrastructure so we couldn't manufacture tanks and we can't even manufacture the uniforms for our soldiers anymore. You can't make a computer without parts from China. You can't make a missile without parts from China. China, our enemy. Manchurian Candidate. Manchuria is part of China, isn't it? If not, it's right next door. Yeah. Devalue the American dollar, degrade America's water and forests with Orwellian names like Healthy Forest, Clean Sky, Clean Air Act, Clear Skies initiatives. Divide the American people by race, by religion, by region, by culture. Make them hate each other. Damage the American military, overstretch it, make it so that nobody will even want to join the military. Destroy our credibility around the world. Add trillions of dollars to the national debt. Double oil prices. Reduce the value of the dollar. Get America involved in a war that it can't win. I'd say they're doing a pretty good job. And now they want their guy in. 1-866-889-8894. Actually, he is in. Our telephone number, Susan in Madison, Wisconsin, online. Hey, Susan.
Hi there. I heard the gentleman that was on last who was saying that it would be a good idea for anyone that wants to impeach Bush to go to Washington, D.C. on September 24th
right, to
participate in a rally. And my question is, you know, with the Internet, he said don't just sit in your living room, you know, and yell. Well, I emailed both of my senators and my representative, my local representative, and I told them that I wanted them to start impeachment proceedings on Bush.
Yeah.
And to ask about the Downing Street minutes and several other things. Well, I got canned letters back about how the war, basically, and nothing really about impeach Bush. But my question really is, you know, what difference is it going to make if I get on an airplane and go to Washington, D.C., or if I just continue to do my voting, you know, and participate that way and Email my congressman. What else can I do?
Well, I'd say they're both
important. Do I have to jump on a plane and go to Washington?
No, you don't. No, you don't have to, Susan. Obviously, you don't have to. And although, you know, if you're inclined, I mean, there's some people like that kind of thing, and you know, would enjoy participating in a big crowd and a big rally. Other people don't like crowds; they'd rather just do it from home. But it's all important. It's all important. Whatever your inclination is, it's all important. Let me just suggest, by the way, that email is a lightweight response. You know, it's a lightweight medium into the office of your senators. That is to say, they don't consider it high impact. The high impact things, the three high impact things that you can do with your senators are, number one, call them. It's a toll-free call. It doesn't cost a penny. It's 1-877. You just remember the 877. That's the toll-free part of it. SOB USOB. So it's the old Senate office building phone number, actually, but it rings right into the Capitol switchboard in Washington, D.C. And
you can look that up on the Internet, right?
No, actually, this is an unpublished number. As I said, this is the old Senate office building phone number, but it's toll-free.
Can you repeat it?
Yes, 1-877-SOB, as in Senate office building, U, the letter U, like United States of America, SOB. 1-877-SOB-USOB.
That's easy to remember.
Exactly. And you call that number and ask for your senator, and they will connect you to your senator and also for your member of the House of Representatives and talk to their staffer in person. That'll have 50 times the impact of an email. Now, if you want to have twice the impact of a phone call, send a handwritten letter. If you want to have 100 times the impact of a handwritten letter, go to Washington, D.C. and visit their office or go to their local office in your district and knock on the door and sit down with somebody. Those are the high impact things you can do. And then beyond that, get involved with whichever party that they're in. You got a Republican senator, show up at the meetings. Show up and say, "Hey, I want change." You got a Democratic senator, show up at the meetings. Get involved. Speak out in their political base. Now you're getting into their, you know, their system. And that's how you produce change.
My local state representative, would that be much of an impact if I were to show up at that office?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because that person really doesn't participate in votes in the House of Representatives.
You're talking about the U.S. House of Representatives.
I'm talking about my local state representative.
Oh, your state representative. Well, with your state representatives, of course, with state issues, you want to get involved. And sometimes states have things like, you know, resolutions against the war, that kind of thing. So you want to make your opinions known to your state representatives and your state senators as well. So, you know, get involved with all of them. Susan, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. I truly do. Trey in Raleigh, North Carolina. Hey, Trey, what's up?
In light of the revelations about Iran and the recent military deal that the Iraqis made with the Iranians.
Yeah.
Do you think it's just a, I'm wondering if this might have something to do with the reason why the Bush administration, you know, they may have saw this coming. That's why they haven't been too serious about training the Iraqi military response.
Well, I think part of that has been that they're just having a difficult time finding enough Iraqis who are willing to participate. You know, they view us as illegal occupiers. But the flip side of the thing, the side of it that you didn't raise that I was expecting you to raise, is could it be that because the Iranians are Shia and the Iraqi majority is Shia, and increasingly we're seeing that the Iraqis are joining with the Iranians. As you pointed out, they just signed an agreement of a kind of mutual defense, protection kind of thing. Could it be that we want to take out the Iranians before the Iraqis become an established government in December of this year when they have their elections, before that happens, so that there won't be an Iranian influence in Iraq, so that Iran will be so crippled that we'll be able to control Iraq or have our stooges control Iraq? And that, I think, is a really good question. Trey, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice, what's on your mind today?
I believe that this is Bush and Cheney's way of telling the world that we don't care what they think and that we don't care to hear their opinions on anything.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right, Alice. You're absolutely right. And we really should be listening to the words of the Republican, George Voinovich, in this regard. And Alice, thank you so much for your call and for your kind words. The Republican George Voinovich speaking about these issues.
And I'm afraid that when we go to the well, that too many of my colleagues are not going to understand that this appointment is very, very important to our country. at a strategic time when we need friends all over the world. We need somebody up there that's going to be able to get the job done. And I know some of my friends say, don't let it go. George is going to work out. I don't want to take the risk. I came back here and ran for a second term because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time. And before they get to this well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations. I yield the floor.
Republican George Voinovich sobbing on the floor of the United States Senate at the idea of John Bolton at the United Nations, a reality that George Bush just created for us in the world. He gave the finger to the press last week. He gave the finger to the world today. 10 minutes before the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Scott Forrester, our engineer today, our line producer, whatever your official title is there, Scott. I'm not sure. Anyhow, the Assistance and Protection Against Chemical Weapons, International Cooperation Assistance and Protection Implementation. Anyhow, there's this meeting of this group. It is the third regional meeting of the National Authorities of State Parties in Asia. It's going to be held in Tehran, September 6th through the 8th. That's a month from now, a month and 1 week, in Tehran. All the Asian states are going to get together. And what are they going to discuss? Chemical weapons. The meeting is designed as a forum for personnel from national authorities who are involved with issues related to the national implementation of the Chemical Weapons Convention. The prohibition of chemical weapons. Iran hosting the meeting. What's John Bolton going to do to screw that up? Kevin in Orlando, Florida on the line. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, how you doing? I'm really concerned here. I think it is time for real patriots to go to Washington, and I encourage all college students to post flyers concerning this march, and everybody to post flyers, because you know the press isn't going to cover this event.
Yeah.
And I think we really need to get a lot of people up there, because I've written countless letters to senators. I have Mel Martinez down here, for God's sake. And I think, you know, nothing's getting done. I mean, I'm at my wit's end. I've never felt so hopeless in my life, you know. But I think it's time that we go up there to Washington and make our voices heard.
Yeah, well, you have to convert. Each one of us has to, in our own way, convert that energy, that outrage, that concern, that fear, in some cases even appropriately, into action. Because otherwise it'll just, you know, it'll boil up and harm us. And not only that, the action then will create the outcome that we want rather than the outcome that we fear, right? So I'm with you, Kevin, and if you can get to Washington, D.C., I think that would be a great thing. And is it impeachbush.org the best website for information on this event?
I'm not sure.
You're
the
not
gentleman,
sure. Okay.
Yeah, that gentleman who called, I mean, that's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, I'll toss that question out to our chat room. I'm sure somebody will come up with that, and we'll let you know in the next hour of the program. But,
it's
going to be a big gig, and Kevin, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. It's going to be a big gig, and it'll be great to, you know, see. I think it'll be a lot of fun to be there. You know, maybe we'll go. I don't know. We'll check it out. But anyhow, it's going to be the 24th? Well, I'll get the details for you, all the details. I don't have them right in front of me right now. I've got all this Bolton stuff in front of me right now. And that's the issue. George W. Bush, last week, shared his middle digit with the press, telling us through our eyes and ears what he thinks of us. And today he did the same thing to the world. And no doubt we'll hear from the world about that. I'm Tom Hartman. Truth in broadcasting for a change.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to Pennsylvania, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, podcasting at iTunes.com. Welcome back. John Bolton has just been appointed the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations over the objection of many members of the United States Senate, certainly of George Voinovich. Something we will be talking about more as the program goes on. And it brings to the forefront, I think, this whole issue of who's really running the world. And David Rothkopp has written a book by that title, Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. And David is with us. David, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Before we get into your book and some of the concepts in it, I'm just curious what your take is on the Bolton nomination, how you think the world's going to respond to this.
Well, I think there may be a few hours or a couple of days of expressed discomfort for all the reasons that have dominated the media, but I think the main interest of the rest of the world is, does this guy now go with the United Nations with any agenda at all? Is the Bush administration seriously committed to trying to promote reform within the United Nations, or is he simply going to fade, you know, into the background, since throughout the past 5 years, the Bush administration has not really expressed any interest in strengthening multilateral institutions, and in fact, has tried to avoid them wherever they could.
Yeah, I mean, this is the guy who in 2001 derailed the bioweapons conference in Geneva, so therefore there's no international enforcement mechanism about biological weapons right now. As a result of that, the 1972 Biological Weapons Convention is no longer, you know, it has no teeth. In 2002, he was accusing Cuba of having biological weapons, even as he had taken the teeth out of the whole thing itself. It's really... quite well. I don't know. I don't want to turn this into a rant about John Bolton. I've already done that, and I will do more of it as the program goes on.
Well, look, you know, the John Bolton thing is infuriating on a number of levels, but I do think that having said that, and having all of us sort of expressed our frustration with the process as it's gone, it would be useful to focus on the real issue at hand. The UN isn't functioning terribly well. The international institutions that we've had for 60 years are not up to the challenges we face. There's no way to address the issues that we need to address, whether they're issues of security or issues of economics or issues of international environment, without having a functioning international system. And pretty soon we've got to move past the personality politics of Washington towards actually fixing these things. Or we're all going to be in a much deeper problem than any associated with any one person.
In your book, Running the World, the book is really a look into the National Security Council, you call them the Architects of American Power. Describe for our listeners exactly what the National Security Council is.
Well, I mean, the NSC was established right after the Second World War, and it was designed to bring together the president and his principal advisors on national security issues to ensure that the president had access to the kind of advice that he or she might need while facing the challenges that the U.S. was likely to face. At the time, it were the challenges of the Cold War and the rivalry with the Soviet Union. There's a formal NSC, which is the president, the vice president, secretary of state, secretary of defense, and other senior officials that they appoint. There's an NSC staff, which the national security advisor runs, which prepares speeches and plans trips and runs policy discussions and implements policy out from the White House into the agencies. And then there's kind of an informal NSC, the president's kitchen cabinet, if you will. But collectively, the group has the ability to deliver more power to more places more rapidly with more impact than any other committee in the history of the world. And so they're really the most powerful committee in world history, and yet very little is understood about them by the people to whom they report, which is to say the American people.
Why do you suggest in Chapter 6, your title of your chapter, America in Decline, the NSC Ascendant, that is there a relationship between the two?
Well, I don't think there was a relationship between the two per se. That chapter is the chapter that is the Nixon chapter. chapter. And what happened was that, you know, the United States was facing the trauma of Vietnam. There was a lack of confidence that the United States was actually, you know, going to actually maintain its footing with the Soviet Union. Détente came out of a sense that we were actually losing ground. But meanwhile, Nixon passed an enormous amount of power on to Henry Kissinger. And Kissinger is the sort of father of the NSC as a central institution in the U.S. government, even though it had existed for a couple of decades before. And since Kissinger, national security advisors have risen to be even more important most of the time than secretaries of state.
And Henry Kissinger was your boss at one point in time, was he not?
Yeah, I worked at Kissinger Associates for a couple of years after having worked for a couple of years in the Clinton administration.
Do you find that your association with a guy that many people in the world consider one of the world's great war criminals has hurt or helped you?
Well, it's, you know, I mean, it's certainly come up. I've never been associated with any of that stuff. And as I said, I was the Democrat in the office. You know, I was the guy who'd come out of the Clinton administration, and it actually focused on U.S. issues with regard to emerging markets. So I was kind of on the right side of these issues. Certainly these things have dogged Kissinger, and with some reason, I think, in a number of the cases, whether it's Chile or Timor or Cambodia, these are things that are part of his legacy that he's got to grapple with. Yeah. By the same token, there is no figure in recent U.S. foreign policy who looms larger. In fact, one of the things I point out in the book is every single national security advisor since Kissinger, and there have been 13 of them, either worked with or for Kissinger, or they worked with or for somebody who worked with or for Kissinger. I call it 2 degrees of Henry Kissinger.
He's sort of the godfather of the role, of the position. Let's talk about how this relates to modern events. What's the relationship between the NSC and the decisions that were made around 9/11?
Well, I mean,
let me just frame that, if I may, for a second. It seems to me, we watch what happened with the British here just over the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. There was a terrorist attack that was, you know, not quite of the scale of 9/11, but, you know, it's a smaller country, whatever. You could say it was their 9/11. And they didn't respond by going off to seek a country to bomb. They responded by finding the people who were responsible for it, good police work, indicting them, bringing them into court, you know, these guys are going to face trial, tracking down people associated with them, just good old-fashioned police work, the same way that the second largest terrorist incident in the United States, the bombing of the Oklahoma City or the Oklahoma Federal Building by Tim McVeigh, was responded to by Bill Clinton, you know, with police work rather than, by, you know, bringing out the military. How did it come about that the Bush administration decided to respond to 9/11 as if a sovereign nation had attacked us, as if it was a Pearl Harbor event, rather than the way that the British just now responded to their attacks and the way that Clinton responded to the Oklahoma City thing? And to what extent does that have to do with the NSC and its current makeup?
Well, the NSC's current makeup is slightly different from the makeup that it was around the time of 9/11. At that point, right, the Bush administration was just getting its sea legs, and that was really the moment that defined its character. I would draw a distinction between the decision to launch military attack against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan and the decision to go after Iraq. I think any administration, including a Gore administration, had there been one, would have gone in after the Taliban and Al-Qaeda because the scale of 9/11 was of such that it evoked naturally in the nation a response that was much more akin to war.
Yeah, now I'm not disagreeing with that, but we didn't finish that job. I mean, the reality is that bin Laden's still running around loose.
No, bin Laden's running around loose.
And we've lost most of Afghanistan.
Right, Taliban's running around loose, and we have a U.S. protectorate that's now the number one exporter of opium in the world. So, I mean, I don't think we can say Afghanistan was a success, but Afghanistan was kind of a natural response. What was an unnatural response and was actually perverse was the decision to go into Iraq, because we knew, and, you know, more evidence is coming out every day, even now, that Iraq's WMD programs were actually in decline, that they posed less of a threat than they had in the past, and that this was actually unfinished business. The problem was the NSC process didn't work in the Bush administration. You're supposed to have a process that takes all the intelligence, all the information at hand, presents real choices to the president, and he is then to make informed decisions. What we had was a process where the National Security Advisor, Condi Rice, was was essentially staffing the president, not running the NSC. Rumsfeld and Cheney had essentially their thumb on the scale. Cheney essentially effectively became national security advisor. They had unfinished business in Iraq. There were a number of others in the team who said, yeah, this is a chance to go in there and advance the kind of regional agenda that we've been advocating for the past 10 years. And they went in, even though the evidence was, in terms of intelligence, that there was no reason to do it, and the arguments that they were making were insupportable by the facts.
What? Who was the primary architect of this? I mean, we have George Bush talking to his biographer in 1999, saying if he became president and he had an opportunity to invade Iraq, he would gain great political capital from that, and he'd use that to promote his agendas, you know, with regard to domestic programs. He had been talking about privatizing Social Security since the 70s. You've got Dick Cheney. Well, without going through the list, I'll let you.
Well, you're in the midst of answering your own question, because the reality is a lot of these people were bringing this kind of agenda into office with them. You had members of the top level of policy team arguing for going into Iraq in the late 90s. They were going to go in. They were going to find an excuse. If 9/11 hadn't happened, we'd still be in Iraq for one reason or another, because Saddam was a bad actor enough that they would have come up with an excuse and gone in and done this. What happened, though, is they took $300 billion and 1,700 American lives and 25,000 Iraqi lives, and more importantly, I think, the opportunity cost of the energy and the resources that we could have devoted to other issues and invested it in this situation for which no one right now sees a likely successful outcome.
We're speaking with David Rothkopf. He's the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. David, we have about a minute left. Do you think that the NSC can be redeemed, that the American foreign policy can be brought back to one that is more in the mold of George Washington, who turned down the opportunity to be a king and warned against foreign entanglements, and less in the model of Imperius Rex?
Of course. I think that that's closer to the American character, and I think that ultimately it will be redeemed. Frankly, I think within the Bush administration, you're seeing more of a focus now on diplomacy and more of a recognition of the mistakes of the first term. That happens a lot, by the way, in second terms. But I don't think this administration is going to ever step too far away from the impulses that led to these problems, and that's why I think ultimately that redemption is going to come from another administration.
In the American conservative magazine, Pat Buchanan's magazine, they're reporting that from within the military, that the Bush administration has ordered plans for a strike on Iran to be executed in the event of any kind of terrorist attack in the United States, whether or not Iran has anything to do with it. Does that make sense to you?
Well, it doesn't make sense to me on many levels. First of all, it's bad policy.
No, secondly, I mean, does it make sense to you that the Bush administration could be thinking like this?
Is it possible? Yeah, it's possible that they'd be thinking about it. I do think that they recognize they don't have enough resources right now to do what they need to do in Iraq. And so to go into Iran in that kind of a stance is something that I think in my conversations with senior military officials would suggest would be foolhardy to the nth degree.
David Rothkopf, the author of Running the World, The Inside Story of the National Security Council and the Architects of American Power. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, an excellent book. I recommend you check it out. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, it's tit for tat, but heck, you know all that. So when George number one brought in the big guns and chased me out of Kuwait, tried to set me straight, I arranged a little hit on that Texas twit. Well, it didn't quite work.
Yes, the old Saddam song. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, and Chop Liver Productions just sent us a cute little clip here.
There is no United Nations.
John Bolton,
there is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests.
Well, if you want somebody who will kiss us, and someone who will kick down, one who disregards facts and contradicts his opinions, and whose mustache makes him look like a foxhound lord, John Bolton is the man to send to town.
He'll turn the United Nations upside down.
There is no United Nations.
Yeah! Welcome back. Oh, my goodness. Our program, by the way, brought to you by Small Dog Electronics. High technology for low prices. 1-800-511-MAX is their phone number. Check it out if you have for anything computer, all things computer. And Victoria Jones is with us with Talk Radio News Service. Hey, Victoria.
Logan. Well, hi. How are you?
I'm great. John Bolton, though, a tragedy for the world and certainly for the United States.
Well, I mean, just in case anybody was concerned that this might not go through, Bolton will be taking the oath today, Scott McClellan tells us, and then he'll be heading to New York today. So he's very keen to get this thing going, and we were told today that he is a strong, improving diplomat who gets things done.
Yeah, yeah, like destroying the biological weapons treaty and destroying the chemical weapons treaty and destroying and screwing up our negotiations with North Korea. He gets a lot of things done.
He does get a lot of things
done. He showed up down in Florida and helped them with that election in 2000, helped George Bush steal the election from Al Gore, just like John Roberts did.
He's hard-charging, and he gets things done, and Scott McClellan says this is exactly what we need at the United Nations because we need to reform. Not very clear on exactly what we do need to reform, although obviously a great deal. The question was asked today about his non-diplomatic manner and whether that might be a problem. Scott didn't seem to think it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. So anything else happening in Washington today of consequence?
Not a great deal, really. We had a report on how John Roberts, the nominee for the Supreme Court, met with 43 senators, 23 of them Democrats so far, and he's continuing to meet with them, and he's already met with all the Judiciary Committee. So that's all up and running. But basically, no, all the questions of any note were about Bolton, and Scott's basic reply was Democrats playing partisan politics. So, and the question was even asked, well, you know, maybe they wanted to see these documents. And he basically, as we know, is saying that that's an excuse. So he's got the recess point. We were also expected to believe that he didn't actually make the decision to appoint Bolton until after Congress recessed.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We're also supposed to believe in the Tooth Fairy.
Yes.
And he's got a bridge to sell us. It's called Social Security.
He's selling us bridges by the minute.
By the boatload. Okay, Victoria Jones. Thanks a lot for the report, Victoria.
Thank you.
Good talking with you today. Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. John Bolton. Good
there
old John Bolton.
There is no United Nations. There is an international community that occasionally can be led by the only real power left in the world, and that's the United States, when it suits our interests.
When it suits our interests. And of course, George Voinovich... Excuse me. George Voinovich had some somewhat different thoughts on this, the Republican of Ohio.
We're going to vote tomorrow, and I'm afraid that when we go to the well, that too many of my colleagues are not going to understand that this appointment is very, very important to our country. At a strategic time when we need friends all over the world, we need somebody up there that's going to be able to get the job done. And I know some of my friends say, John, let it go. George is going to work out. I don't want to take the risk. I came back here and ran for a second term because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time. And before they get to this well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations. I yield the floor.
Republican George Voinovich of Ohio, United States Senator. He saw the actual secret documents about John Bolton, and he's terrified. 29 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
You might have thought that I would be a little bit lazy. I might not notice, I might not care. Oh, but now you're finding out I'm a little bit crazy.
Uh-oh. And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman. Yeah, it's George Bush. We're discovering he's a little bit crazy. Well, not just Bush, Bolton. Boy, this is incredible. This John, well, not that it was unexpected, But what a tragedy for the United States. What a tragedy for the world. John Bolton, the guy who alleged by Democratic Congressman Henry Waxman to have played a role, this is from the Wikipedia entry, in encouraging the inclusions of claims that Iraq attempted to procure yellowcake uranium from Niger in President Bush's 2003 State of the Union address. It was Bolton, according to Congressman Henry Waxman, who was responsible for George W. Bush putting those 16 words into his speech at the State of the Union, knowing that they were based on a forged document and that they had been debunked. Bolton did this anyway, and now he and the Bush administration are refusing to give the documentation that might prove that to Congress. So Bush says, we don't need no Congress. Why don't they no stinking Congress? And he simply goes ahead and appoints Bolton as a recess appointment. The constitutional provision that allows for the president to appoint people to judiciary positions and executive branch positions that normally require the advice and consent of the United States Senate or the Congress. But he can do it when Congress is not in session, because back 230 years ago, more or less, when the Constitution was put together, everybody understood that, you know, if Congress is not in session and there's an opening, something really critical going on, you can't wait for the couple of weeks for everybody to get on a horse and ride back from, or take a stagecoach back from, you know, wherever it may well be, you know, the southern Georgia or something. You can't do that. Sorry. The president has to have the ability to make an appointment in an emergency. Thus, the recess appointment provision in the Constitution. George Bush using it today. Henry Waxman suggesting it was John Bolton who came up with those 16 words. Those 16 words that Joe Wilson then said, no, that's a lie. Which then led somebody in the Bush administration, maybe even John Bolton, to orchestrate a political assassination of Joe Wilson. And why is it so important to get Bolton in? Well, Bush has a huge political debt to him. Bolton was one of the guys who showed up in 2000 to intimidate the Democrats and intimidate the media into thinking that George had actually won Florida, when now we found out a year later in the article in the New York Times, the Washington Post, that in fact, by any way you count the vote, Al Gore actually got more votes in Florida than George W. Bush did. Had the entire state actually been counted, which the news media actually did. So, you know, Bush has political payback to Bolton. He's got to pay him back for that. He's got to pay him back, and maybe Bolton is blackmailing him. You know, because Bush put his butt on the line there with those 16 words that Bolton fed him. And, you know, Bolton could say, hey, you know, I can tell everybody that you don't know what you're talking about. Or say, you know, who knows? Who knows what kind of power Bolton has. But I think that the real issue is that Bush actually likes and trusts John Bolton because they're cut of the same fabric. They're both bullies. They're both unilateralists. They're both small, narrow thinkers. They're both willing to lie to people to get things done. Neither one of them cares if their actions lead to the death of other human beings. As long as their goals, their agendas are accomplished, their power is preserved, their wealth is increased. And George Bush, in my opinion, is preparing to attack Iran, which will create an international firestorm. And he needs somebody in the United Nations that he can depend on to tell the rest of the world where they can take a leap when they try to tell us that what we're doing is not that different from what Hitler did when he invaded Poland. And John Bolton is that man. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Brian in Cherry Hill, New Jersey on the line. Hey, Brian, what's up?
Hey, Tom. One quick question and one quick statement. Isn't this a slap in the face to Congress if they were, you know, they already said no, and now he's just like, oh, well, we're going to let him in anyway.
Yeah, it is.
Couldn't that affect future votes from Republicans themselves saying, well, if he's just going to, you know, do this anyway, I'm not going to vote for this bill?
No, it won't. You know, the reality is that recess appointments are not all that uncommon, although usually they're not about disputed nominees. Bill Clinton had 170, 180, something like that. George Bush has had over 200 so far. Recess appointments. The majority of them, I don't believe, have been highly disputed nominees. It's just, you know, an efficient way to get things done or quick way or whatever.
Yeah, it's a major slap in the face, I would think.
Yeah, you know, I suspect that there are some members of Congress who will take it as such. But they have gotten so many slaps in the face. I mean, this is the relationship that Congress has with George Bush is the relationship that an abused wife has with her husband. You know, and even more so the Democrats. I mean, the Democrats are, you know, maybe if we're nice, he won't hit us again.
Yeah.
And, you know, wham! Well, maybe if we're a little nicer, he won't hit us again. Wham! Maybe if we just keep our mouth shut, he won't hit. Wham! And, you know, it doesn't work. I'm sorry, you know.
And also, I was looking on the Project for New American Century's website. I was reading some of their stuff from, like, 98. And I didn't realize up until today that John Bolton's actually part of the Project for New American Century. Lo and behold, how amazing is that?
Yeah, he signed that document, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Letter to Al Gore, or to
Bill Clinton in 1998, yeah.
Yeah.
That's how I found it. I was reading that over again. So.
Surprise! Surprise!
Exactly. All right. Well, thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, what's up?
Well, I totally agree with everything you and everyone else are saying about Bolton, but could I switch topics a moment? Or?
Yeah, if you wish.
About the break that Bill Frist had with President Bush on the stem cell research?
Yes.
I know we were talking a while back, and I was telling you that Frist, however bad he may be, you know, is not as bad as someone like Tom DeLay. The fact that he switched on this issue, does that increase your opinion of him at all?
No. No, but, you know, because Bill Frist, you know, sold his soul out to the partisans a long time ago. I think that a couple of things are at play here. Number one, if Bill Frist wants to be president, he has come to the realization. And by the way, this flip may be causing the rest of mainstream Republicans in Washington, D.C. to come to the same realization. He's come to the realization that the right-wing fringe of the Republican Party that is so hysterical about abortion and opposed to birth control and wants creationism taught in the schools and that is anti-science and wants to roll back, you know, basically the Taliban inside the Republican Party. The religious conservatives, the religious extremists within the Republican Party are not going to win him an election. In fact, they're going to hurt him because the rest of America is just about over it with these folks. And so, number one, there's the realization on his part that he can look Tony Perkins in the eye and tell him to take a leap. And this is just a month after he was sucking up to him on it. You know, he made Tony Perkins. So there's that, number one. Number two, Bill Frist may also be realizing that the probability of his ever actually successfully running for president is pretty awful low. And so what's his fallback? You know, what's he going to do with the rest of his life, assuming that the guy actually likes to work? I mean, he's a multimillionaire. His father's a billionaire. He doesn't have to work. But if he likes to work, what would he want to go into? What business would he want to go into? I would say probably medicine. He can't go back to being a surgeon. He's out of practice. So, you know, maybe running a stem cell company might be a lucrative business to get into.
Well,
and so, you know, there's that. So take your choice.
Well, a couple of things, though. I mean, number one, we would hope that as a doctor, he just saw through the political nonsense here and just came to a medical decision. Number two.
Well, hang on just a second here, Rick. As a doctor, he could have, should have, and probably did see through that stuff years ago.
Sure. But
it's
not like
there was some big discovery last week that caused Bill Frist to wake up.
No, but better late than never. And the other thing is, as progressives, don't we want the religious right and those radical right-wingers in the Republican Party to lose influence? Don't we want that?
Yes, I rejoice in that.
Okay.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And
I guess I just see a sliver of hope here, you know?
Yeah, well, I see, you know, it's a crack in the wall. It certainly is,
sure.
Rick. It absolutely is a crack in the wall. And I, you know, I don't disagree with you on that. And thank you for the call, by the way. But it's also not... It's not something of great consequence or great moment in my mind. You know, I know the press has just been falling all over it, but, you know, who knows? Phil in Tampa, Florida on the line. Hey, Phil, what's on your mind today?
Hi. You know, I was listening to the guest and a lot of the other things that are currently discussed on the show and, you know, all of the negative things that are happening and stuff. And I was thinking, it's just like the Florida weather report. It's always the same. It's going to be 90. It's going to be humid. There might be rain in the afternoon with thunder showers. Now, we know it's not going to change. We know that almost nobody can do anything about it, and nobody likes it.
Yeah.
So, and that seems to be
okay, let me state what's going on. Let me strongly
disagree
with you, Phil.
It's just like the weather.
It is not just like the weather. I'm sorry. We don't vote on the weather. We don't have some say in the weather, and we do have a say in who's running our country.
Do we?
We absolutely do. Even with the rigged voting machines, even with the corrupt administration, even with all the corporate power, we the people still have some say left in this country. Not only am I convinced of it, you can see the evidence of it all around you. Yes, they get through a lot of corrupt stuff, their bankruptcy bill, their CAFTA. There's a lot of stuff that they don't get through as well. And we have to increase our power. We have to speak out more loudly. We have to participate more aggressively in this. And we can change it. It's not like the weather, Phil.
Oh, I don't know. It just, if you look, like, for example, on the energy bill, he's giving big tax cuts to Mobil, Exxon, or Exxon Mobil, and the rest of them, so they'll drill more oil.
Yeah.
Oil is at $61 a barrel.
I know. It went up $1 today, by the way, on the death of King Fahd.
Right. Exxon Mobil has had the highest earnings in their lifetime the last two quarters.
Yeah, arguably in the history of the world.
Right. They need an incentive.
Yeah. Oh,
why
sure.
Do they need an incentive?
Well, because then, the Bush administration, give them a little money. They'll, you scratch our back, we'll scratch yours. I mean,
you
and I know. See, here's the thing, Phil. You and I know that this administration is the most corrupt administration in the history of the United States. They're even beating out the Reagan administration. And the only reason why the Reagan administration had more senior officials convicted of major felonies than any administration in history was because there were a few Democrats in Congress who could actually point things out, and those Democrats don't control Congress right now like they did during much of the Reagan administration. But the reality is that the corruption is absolutely mind-boggling. Now here's the kind of good part of that, not good part of the corruption, but the good part of the story, as it were, and that is that Bush's approval rating among Republicans is below 50%.
But see, the fact is,
people are waking up to this, Phil.
Yeah, but he's got over three years left.
Yeah, three.
So it doesn't matter.
They were saying the same thing about Richard Nixon in '73.
Yeah, but Nixon resigned.
Nixon resigned because articles of impeachment were offered.
Right.
In 1972.
Right.
In fact, it was last week, the anniversary of it.
This guy is not going to resign. This guy has 3 years to continue to give away the taxpayers' money and give away the country to all his pals
and destroy the United States. And if we just sit around and say that, then in fact that'll become the reality. But if instead we help the Democrats take either the Senate or the House or both in the midterm elections, in the 2006 elections, 2007 will be the end of the Bush reign.
Well, only if we can get Lieberman to when he's asked to go on TV or give a statement, say, I have nothing to say.
Lieberman's not a Democrat.
But, when they want to get a Democrat's opinion, they go to Lieberman.
I know, and he's just so pleased to do it. It's a tragedy, and the Democratic Party needs to start standing up and say, Joe Lieberman is a traitor to the working people in America. Joe Lieberman has stabbed the Democratic Party in the back.
Oh.
Joe and his little cabal. It's absolutely the case. Phil, thanks for the call. I mean, we have to get active. We have to get out there, and we have to get active. Michael in Birmingham, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Michael, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I was looking at the Larry Flynt web page, and there's talk on there about like Bolton when he was married to his first wife, like all these sex clubs, and I guess it was called Plato's Retreat in New York.
That information came out a few months ago, actually, and it got a day or so's play in the press, and then it went away.
Yeah, the story didn't have any legs at all. I'm surprised that it just didn't kind of make it out there.
Well, I think that a lot of people, particularly in a post-Clinton era, oddly enough, a lot of people figure, okay, the guy had a kinky sex life 20 years ago, so what? And I got to say, I think John Bolton is the worst thing that can happen to American democracy, and I don't care if he went to Plato's Retreat with his wife or even without his wife.
Well, yeah, but, people in the South care about that kind of crap. I could care less, but the point is that, they're trying to, there's all these stories about what he did and how he's so destructive and
I'm concerned about the fact, Michael, the point that we...
Flight.
No, I get what you're saying, you know, and maybe you can go after him with a little character assassination that'll hurt him with the base. But don't you think it's much more important, even if you're talking to a Republican in the South or a Republican in the North, for that matter, to point out that it was John Bolton who screwed up the chemical weapons treaty, that it was John Bolton who screwed up the biological weapons convention so that there are no enforcement provisions right now, so that if anybody comes after us with biological weapons, there's no way to even know that it's coming, that it was John Bolton who screwed up our negotiations with North Korea that then allowed them, not just allowed them, encouraged them, you know, put them in a position where they felt like they had no choice but to develop nuclear weapons that they not only might use against us, but they might sell to somebody who would use against us. Don't you think it would be more effective to tell a Republican that John Bolton has committed treason against the United States in these specific actions of destroying the interests, the national security interests of the United States, rather than the fact that he and his wife might have been, you know, screwing in public at Plato's Retreat or something like that?
Well, you know, I agree with you, but like the mainstream media always loves those kind of stories.
Oh yeah, I know. If it bleeds, it leads, and if it's naked, it goes on page one. I get it. And that one didn't have legs. And besides that, I'm frankly more concerned with the reality. Michael, thank you for the call. I'm frankly more concerned with the reality of what John Bolton has done to the United States already. You know, lying us into a war 10 minutes before the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I think it's time for a change, 'cause I'm tired of these games. I'm gonna leave on the side.
And welcome back, my friends. Time for a change. Yes, and it's only going to happen if we start getting politically active. If you join and infiltrate the Democratic and or the Republican Party, whatever your inclination may be, join the Green Party, join the Progressive Party. Get out there, get active. Show up at a Democracy for America meeting. Go to democracyforamerica.com and plug your name in and find out what's going on and show up for one of those meetings. Here in Oregon, it's Democracy for Oregon. I was at one of the meetings a while ago. Howard Dean's brother, Jim Dean, showed up. It was a hoot. Remarkable stuff going on. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Cindy in Ann Arbor, Michigan, on the line. Hey, Cindy, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Tom. I just had a question. I've been listening today about your discussion regarding Bolton being appointed to the United Nations, and I was wondering if you see any connection between that and between Wolfowitz being appointed to, I think it was the World Bank.
Yes, president of the World Bank.
I mean, it's almost like New American Century gone international.
Yeah, it has, and that's what it was always about. It was always about the United States becoming a worldwide empire. And in fact, you'll recall maybe a year ago or so, there was all this discussion about should we use the E word, you know, the empire word.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the conservative publications, I forget which one, had a big cover story about it's time to start calling it what it is and talk about the American empire and blah, 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 blah. And what is particularly scary about this is if you go back and you read Gibbon's history of the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. Sorry to say the rise and fall. That's the Third Reich is that book. But the decline and fall of the Roman Empire. He points out that probably the main thing that led to the end of the Roman Empire was that they got overextended by getting themselves involved in the Middle East in wars that they couldn't win. And here we are.
Yeah, isn't it amazing? And yet so many people just don't even see it. Or don't want to.
Yeah, no, and they don't. But I got it. And Cindy, thank you for the call.
You're welcome.
And your kind comments. I have to say, I think that the main thing here, though, is that Bolton is the guy for the war in Iran. You know, just a year from now, we can all go back and play the tape of this stuff today, and we'll see if I'm right or wrong. And I hope I'm wrong. But I suspect that there is something to this report in the American Conservative magazine. That Dick Cheney's office has asked the United States Strategic Command, STRATCOM, to come up with plans to attack Iran in the event the United States is attacked internally by anybody in any way. Even if, and particularly if, Iran has nothing to do with it. Just any excuse to attack Iran. And that, there's senior Air Force officers are appalled by this. But nobody's prepared to damage his career by posing any objections. The story, see, I mean, this is the success of outing Joe Wilson's wife. Intimidate and you got control. That's the Bush administration motto.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the place where smart people get their news, the pill that will help you escape the matrix, Viagra for your brain. Welcome back to our program. Yeah, George Bush last week gave the central digit to the media, and this morning did the same to the world. And as Republican member of the United States Senate, George Voinovich of Ohio said, breaking down and sobbing, openly sobbing on the floor of the United States Senate, discussing the possibility that this madman might end up United States ambassador, U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. George Voinovich.
Too many of my colleagues are not going to understand that this appointment is very, very important to our country. At a strategic time when we need friends all over the world, we need somebody up there that's going to be able to get the job done. And I know some of my friends say, don't let it go, George, it's going to work out. I don't want to take the risk. I came back here and ran for a second term because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time, and before they get to this well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations. I yield the floor.
Yeah. Now, how does this come about? How does it come about that an insane policy, series of policies could be done? How does it come about that you get people in office who appear to be the Manchurian candidates, who appear not to care about the United States, who appear to want to actually destroy the United States? How does it come about that you get people in office who actually run the country into bankruptcy by giving tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires and not cutting back on spending like they say they intend to, and instead running up huge debts and then borrowing that money from one of the largest communist dictatorships in the world, communist China, putting us entirely at their mercy, and then actively and aggressively set out to move our industrial infrastructure out of the United States and into that country and other countries like it? How does that happen? How do you get people running this country who really don't give a damn about this country, who use jingoistic patriotism, but really want illegal immigrants to be coming in and doing every possible job all across the country because it's more profitable for the big multinational corporations, who want our good-paying jobs to be shipped overseas because it's more profitable for the multinational corporations, who think it's just fine that a corporation take billions, tens of billions of dollars, taxpayer dollars, in order to rebuild Iraq or whatever, and run it through a corporation that's shelled in Bermuda so that they don't have to pay any federal taxes, as is the case with KBR of Halliburton. How do you get these kind of people in office? Is it possible that the people of the United States wouldn't actually vote for such people? Is it possible that the people of the United States didn't actually vote for such people? Is it possible that there's massive vote fraud going on in the United States? Why is it that from essentially the founding of this country until 6-8 years ago, exit polls were almost never wrong? Yeah, I know the Chicago Tribune called it for Dewey instead of Truman. They were the only one. Why is it that the exit polls were always right until electronic voting machines started counting the votes in the late 90s? And then when Bush and his cabal got into the act, suddenly the voting machines' results were startlingly at variance with what the with what the exit polls were showing. Well, Jim March works with blackboxvoting.org and wanted to know. He showed up one day and said, you know, I'd like to just sit there. I'd just like to stand there and watch that central tabulator machine, that machine that is counting the votes. I'd like to just stand there and watch that machine, make sure that, you know, I'm not going to touch it. Just want to, you know, I'd like to see my vote being counted. After all, the, you know, most of the laws, the Constitution sort of implies that we, the people, have some right to know how our votes are being counted. I'd like to just watch. What happened, Jim March? Welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Jim, what happened when you tried to stand there and watch the vote being counted?
Well, I think the technical term is stuffed and cuffed. I got arrested. The thing I think you need to be aware of is that under the California election laws, at least, we do have an individual civil right to observe the election. So this was, I was trying to exercise my civil right to observe what's going on, and they didn't like that one bit. And now they
who is they, Jim?
They appear to be the election officials in San Diego County.
And so, okay? So let's just, you know, tell us the story here. What happened? San Diego County's holding an election. When was this election?
This was the 26th. It was a mayor's race. It was
just like last Wednesday or Thursday?
Tuesday, actually.
Tuesday, last Tuesday. Okay,
right.
I have a calendar in front of me.
Okay.
So last Tuesday they're having a mayor's election,
right?
And you go down and you say, I want to see the vote being counted.
Well, the story actually starts earlier than that, because 2 weeks earlier I had submitted a letter saying, hey, you guys have got to let us see what's going on with the vote counting on not just the memory cards being physically handled, but also what's going on the screen that controls all this. So I submitted a letter to that effect 2 weeks ago, hand-delivered through a local activist. So they knew that there was a civil right inherent in what was going on. Now, during the
week... Now, let me just interrupt you here. The reason why is because, as Bev Harris and Howard Dean showed on national television on Topic A with Tina Brown, if you take the central tabulator machine, that's the machine that all of the vote counting machines feed into from all over the precinct.
Right.
That is simply an IBM PC running Windows operating system, and the GEMS system, the Diebold software, uses a database that can be opened with Excel, with Microsoft Excel.
No, Microsoft Access.
Microsoft Access, okay. It's just a basic database, and anybody can go in through the operating system and open that database as a database, rather than going through the GEMS program, and alter the result of the election instantaneously and untraceably. Anybody. I mean, you know, it doesn't even, you don't even have to be a hacker. You could teach some, well, they taught me how to do it in 90 seconds on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
And so you just wanted to watch and make sure that nobody was doing that, either sitting there or doing it remotely, coming in on a modem, right?
Pretty much. Well, unfortunately, if they did come in remotely, it would be very hard to spot through that screen. But at a minimum, I could make sure they weren't cheating in that fashion or any of several other possible tricks you could do on that central tabulator.
Okay.
But the point is, the real point here is establishing a civil right to watch what's going on. Honestly, a lot of other counties were actually acting worse. Let me get back to my story for a second. In the week before the election, the election officials said, oh, yeah, you're right, we're going to let people watch the screen. It'll be behind glass, but it'll be facing the viewing audience, and you'll be able to see what's going on. That's what they said to local activists. So I went down to San Diego with the intent of just watching. I didn't think any protest would be necessary or any firm demand of civil rights. It looked like they were being fairly cool. Unlike San Joaquin County, which I had observed earlier, in the 2004 race, San Joaquin County had this screen 20 feet away from the audience and turned 180 degrees from us. So they were completely violating our rights.
You couldn't see a thing.
Okay, that was, yeah, absolutely. That was San Joaquin County, spring of 2004. Now, a lot of other counties do this more. In fact, the San Joaquin approach is more common up and down through the state. One of the main reasons we want to see the tabulators is just to see if the bloody things crash. We've had reports from Riverside County. An election observer down there, Jeremiah Aiken, managed to see one tiny sliver of the screen from a side profile, and he was pretty sure he kept seeing a Windows blue screen of death going on during an LNA test. But they were going, oh, no, it's not crashing. What the heck you mean it's not crashing?
Now, for those who are listening who may not be computer literate, the Windows blue screen of death means that not only has the computer just crashed, but that all the data in it has probably been lost, and so all the votes.
Well,
came
no, I wouldn't quite go that far, Tom. I wouldn't quite say that all the data has been lost, but it's a fairly serious crash. The screen goes from the normal white background to all blue with an error message text. That's why they call it blue screen of death.
Right.
But anyways, one of the reasons we want to be able to see these tabulators on a regular basis is just to observe whether or not they crash, for crying out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the point here is that San Diego presented an opportunity to establish this civil right, to observe what's going on, not just physically, but electronically, all up and down the state. And it seemed very important to get that right established in court before the November elections, and this was an opportunity to do that. So I go down there at 3:30 on the day of the election. We meet with the assistant registrar of voters, the guy named Charlie McNamara. Meet with him, he gives us a guided tour, and it's like, oh, we got a problem, because they've taken the monitor and pointed at the audience, all right, but 8 feet behind glass. You can't read the screen. Oops. So we give him three choices. We say, look, option one, if you've got a PowerPoint projector or something laying around, we can plug that in and basically duplicate the screen results and shoot them at the wall behind the audience. So we could turn our heads 180 degrees and we could read it there. That would work. Or I offered to run down to Fry's Electronics a couple of miles away, pay $200 for a video signal splitter. We plug that in, and we plug an additional monitor in closer to the crowd. That would work. Wouldn't present a security risk. Another option is just move the frickin' monitor a little closer to us, will you? Well, they refused all three options. It is absolutely not. Interestingly enough, they said that we'll think about it for the November election. We'll think about changing policies and procedures, but for right now, it just wouldn't be convenient. Well, my attitude is that civil rights aren't really linked to convenience. So as the election progressed, I didn't do anything right away. We were just normally observing. And by about 10:30, 10:45 range, it was obvious that there were things going on in that room that we simply had no idea what. They had moved a batch of new, ordinary voting machines, and we were plugging them in one by one. They said later that it was about testing some memory cards that didn't really work properly in the field, or something like that. So the issue here, Tom, is that these laws that allow public observation of the counting of the vote were put there to prevent cheating on the part of election officials. You get that, right?
Sure.
That's the original design intent of these laws. If you don't have enough access to make sure they're not cheating, then your rights to observe are being curtailed.
Yeah.
So by about 10:45, it was obvious there was all kinds of stuff going on in there, including being controlled at the GEMS tabulator. We couldn't see, both because it was too far and because when the operator was sitting there using it, you couldn't see straight through the back of his head.
Right. We're talking with Jim March of blackboxvoting.org. And in just a second, when we come back, I'm going to ask Jim. Jim got arrested trying to observe an election. California law establishes as a civil right. The right to observe an election requires election officials to allow people to observe elections. Jim got arrested. We're going to ask him, what kind of crime was he charged with after he got arrested? What might the outcome of this be, and what does this mean for elections all over the United States? It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tide that binds.
Yeah, we got to keep our eyes open. These voting machines. We're talking with Jim March.
Yep.
And Jim, Dave in Humboldt County is on the line. He wants to share a comment or question with you. Is that all right?
By all means.
Okay. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Well, Jim, I think you're doing a wonderful thing for your country, you and your colleagues there at Black Box. I've got a premise that I would like to give you first, and that is that election fraud is totally consistent with the ethics of these neocons who will invade countries for their personal gain, who will bring us Tradergate, who just one thing after another, the act is not beneath them. I understand we have several lawsuits in various stages progressing through the courts, one to overturn yet the Ohio vote.
Yeah.
Do you have any knowledge of, does it look like there's a chance on any of them, and can we get Holt's bill in?
Well, I haven't kept personally track of what's going on in Ohio to enough of a degree to comment on that. I will say this. Listen, this really is a nonpartisan issue. Most of the people here are going to have a hard time swallowing that, but look, right now there's more fraud that appears to be tied to the Republicans than the Democrats, but it's not all one-sided. There's some very fishy things that happened in Washington State regarding the governor's race, especially in King County, Washington. We had precincts with far more votes than voters, several of them, and the entire race was only like 176 votes difference. So that event up in Washington State has actually shaken a lot of my fellow Republicans up, and clued them in that, you know, hey, maybe this really is something to worry about. We have to fix this, because no matter what, if we go 20 years with election fraud, we'll have civil war.
Yeah, it's people have to trust, you know, in the elections. I mean, that's the bottom line. So, Jim March, we have about 2 minutes left here, Jim.
Sure.
And you showed up. You said you wanted to observe the election.
Yeah.
They said, go stand 8 feet away and behind the glass.
Yeah.
You walked up behind the machine to stand there and observe it. They arrested you and hauled you off. Is that a good summary?
Basically, I walked into what they called their secure area and got dragged out by the back of the belt.
Right. And then what crime did they charge you with?
Well, that's the scary part. They've decided to charge me with essentially felony elections tampering. The charge is California Election Code 18502, which is interference with an election in such a way as to interference with an election officer in such a way as to harm the fairness and accuracy of the vote. Well, that charge is not going to stick. They might be able to get the first part established. I interfered with an election officer for all of about 3 seconds. But the second half of it, that you also have to be messing with the fairness integrity of the vote, no. They're not going to be able to make that case.
Yeah.
So I am not real worried about...
But how many years in jail are you facing if they were to successfully prosecute?
Up to three.
Up to 3 years in prison?
Yeah.
Wow. For wanting to watch your vote that the California Constitution gives you the right to do.
Mm-hmm.
No, what do you think? Do you think any change is going to come out of this?
Oh, I'm quite certain of it. I'm quite certain.
What can people do? We're on several stations in California. What can people in California do specifically about your situation? What can people all over the United States do about wanting to make sure that our elections are transparent?
First of all, get on the California Election Protection Network Yahoo News Group. California Election Protection, go to groups.yahoo.com. That's becoming ground zero for election reform in California.
Okay, is there a link off blackboxvoting.org for that?
No, go to groups.yahoo.com. I think I should put that link up on Blackbox
soon.
Yeah,
you should.
I'll work on that over the next couple of days.
And very quickly, Jim, what else can people do?
Hey, show up to court Wednesday. It should be fun. It's just my arraignment, but as many people coming and politely observing...
What courthouse?
I've got that right here. It's in down 220 Broadway, felony court.
In San Diego.
In San Diego.
Okay. Jim, I wish you well. The website, blackboxvoting.org, is for the larger work that you're doing, the organization you're working with.
A lot of details there.
Yeah, for sure. Keep up the great work, Jim, and thanks for being with us today. Jim March at blackboxvoting.org. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Poncho was a bandit boy. His horse was fast as polished steel.
Welcome back, my friends.
He wore a gun outside his pants for all the honest world to feel. Well, Poncho met his match, you know, on the deserts down in Mexico. No nobody heard his dying words. Father, that's the way it goes.
Indeed. Oh, Willie. Welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. TomHartman.com, the website, if you'd like to drop into our live chat room. Our program brought to you by, among others, Small Dog Electronics, high technology for low prices. 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS for Small Dog Electronics. And anything you need computer-wise, give them a call and say hi and tell them you heard about them on the Tom Hartman program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. The right-wing talking points are out. Yes, indeed, I got mine. Along with the carbon copy that went to Sean Hannity and to Rush Bimbo and the whole bunch. This from the Freedom Alliance. And I quote, John Bolton deserved an up or down vote in the House, in the United States Senate, something Democrats who are beholden to Kofi Annan refused to give him. Yes, Kofi Annan, he has been giving secret campaign contributions to Democrats. Didn't you know? Back to the news release, excuse me. Every now and then you just have to, respond. Given the lack of political integrity on Capitol Hill, the president did the right thing in making this recess appointment. While the left has obstructed the appointment of Bolton as U.N. ambassador, the left has obstructed John Bolton? John Bolton, that noble guy who... When it suits our interest, yeah. That's Bolton, but here's one of those leftists, right? One of those lefties. One of those dangerous liberals.
We're going to vote tomorrow. And I'm afraid that when we go to the well...
Uh-oh. I don't think this guy's a liberal.
Too many of my colleagues...
In fact, I'm sure he's not. He's... a conservative Republican.
Too many of my colleagues are not going to understand that this appointment is very, very important to our country.
And he's crying.
At a strategic time when we need friends all over the world, we need somebody up there that's going to be able to get the job done.
And he doesn't think that John Bolton can get the job done because George Voinovich, Republican of Ohio, has seen the secret documents, has seen the secret history of John Bolton. And he says, as he breaks down into tears, sobbing on the floor of the United States Senate.
And I know some of my friends say, don't let it go, George, it's going to work out. I don't want to take the risk.
He doesn't want to risk the United States with John Bolton.
I came back here and ran for a second term because I'm worried about my kids and my grandchildren. And I just hope my colleagues will take the time. And before they get to this well, do some serious thinking about whether or not we should send John Bolton to the United Nations.
Yeah, I just hope they'll do some serious thinking. Back to the talking points from the Reich. While the left has obstructed the appointment of John Bolton as UN ambassador, more corruption has surfaced in the oil for food scandal. Corruption? Oil? Don't those words connect to Halliburton more often than... I mean, isn't there like $8.9 billion that the United States government has officially said was embezzled by persons unknown, but presumably the contractor, the second largest army in Iraq? Private corporations. Mostly American corporations. Companies like Kellogg, Brown and Root, and Halliburton, and in the oil for food scandal, Kofi Annan has been playing footsies with Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe. Say what? Let's see. Kofi Annan, who's head of the United Nations, has been playing footsie with Robert Mugabe, arguably one of the greatest mass murderers. He's using a little more passive. He's using starvation, but he's probably 2 million people are going to die in Zimbabwe. of famine as a result of Robert Mugabe. Terrible man. But who are the dictators that we're supporting around the world? Anyhow, we don't talk about that. Okay. Kofi Annan has been playing footsies with Zimbabwean dictator Robert Mugabe. There's been no accountability in peacekeeping scandals. Eh? And reminiscent of FDR, Kofi Annan is trying to neutralize the United States by packing the Security Council. Excuse me, FDR was president of the United States, not head of the U.N. Security Council, and he certainly tried to pack the Security Council with allies of the United States to act as a counterweight to the Soviet Union. Anyhow, the right-wing talking points continue. Clearly, some adult supervision is needed at the U.N. right now, and John Bolton is the right man for the job. So, your right-wing talking points for the day. Now, no need to listen to all those other radio programs. You already know what they're going to say. You absolutely know what they're going to say. And, as I said, you know, how do these guys do this? How do you get this kind of right, extremist right-wingers in power? Could it be that our elections are not quite as fair and honest as we thought? Could it be that the exit polls that showed that George Bush lost the 2004 election by 3 million votes, when the electronic voting machine said he won it by 2 million votes, that the exit polls were actually right? Oddly, that was almost the exact same margin that happened in the Ukraine. In the Ukraine, they held another election. They said, gee, something must be wrong here. Exit polls are never off like this. In Germany, it takes 4 days to count the vote because it's all done by hand on paper. Civil servants take a couple of days off from their normal jobs. The DMV slows down a little bit. They count the votes with politicians, you know, representatives of the political parties, watching over their shoulders. It takes 4 days, but the people know within 10 minutes of the time the polls close who won. Why? Because ever since 1952, the polls, the exit polls in Germany have never been more than 0.1% off. But somehow our exit polls in the United States, blew it. But only in the last three elections, only in the elections that the Bushes were involved with. How could that be? And this then leads us to things like the greatest intelligence failure in the history of the world, 9/11, happening after the president gets 56 different memos telling him that Osama bin Laden is intending to hijack airplanes and crash them into buildings like the tallest buildings in New York City. Condi Rice going on TV afterwards, we could never imagine that anybody would want to hijack an airplane and use it as a missile. We couldn't imagine it. Condi Rice on TV saying that when just months before George Bush had been at a G8 meeting in the Mediterranean, and they had moved him out of the city and put him on a boat, on a U.S. destroyer, because the word had come down that bin Laden was going to attack, was going to hijack airplanes and suicide bomb them into the building where George Bush was sleeping. And so he slept in a U.S. aircraft carrier, on a destroyer, out in the Mediterranean. And this was months before 9/11. Oh, we could never have imagined. You have to really wonder sometimes, is there a Manchurian candidate here? 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number. Will in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Will, what's up?
Tom, thanks for taking my call, buddy.
Hey, you're welcome. I'm pleased to do it. Thanks for calling.
No, I love it. I enjoy your show. And I missed Senator Bernie Sanders, I think.
Yeah, he's on every Friday. He's actually a congressman right now. He's running for the United States Senate. But he's the only guy in the entire House of Representatives who's not a Democrat and is not a Republican.
Well, I'm an independent, and I've been so since I came back from Vietnam, Tom. Yeah. I registered independent in 1967.
Yeah, I am too.
I'll tell you what, boy, did they give me a heartburn about it, Tom.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So what's up, Will?
All right, please indulge me for maybe a minute and 33. First, Daddy Bush was CIA, remember?
Yeah.
He was the head of the CIA.
Well, he worked for the CIA most of his adult life, and then he became the head of it at one point, yeah.
And did you cover that by any chance, that Iran-Contra scandal?
Sure.
Okay. So your listeners know about that, that they cut a deal with that Ayatollah.
Oh, yeah, the whole October surprise thing, yes. I've talked about it many times on this program.
Right.
And then when Bill Casey was going to was called before, the Bill Casey was the Reagan-Bush campaign manager, and afterwards they made him head of the CIA. And when the possibility that George Bush Sr. had cut a deal with the Ayatollah to hold the hostages until after the election so that Jimmy Carter would lose the election, which is what happened, of course, and then in exchange for that, we would sell them missiles because they had all these American-made weapon systems that we had sold the Shah, and it was then illegal to sell them further missiles, that we would sell them these missiles if they would just hold the hostages. The guy who had cut the deal was William Casey. You know, he'd gone over there with George Bush to Paris to meet these guys. And Casey was subpoenaed to testify before the United States Senate, before the, you know, before the committee that was looking into this. And at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I don't have the book in front of me, I don't have the date. This is all in Barbara Honegger's book, October Surprise. And at 10 o'clock that morning, 4 hours before he was supposed to testify, when his lawyer, who I believe was named Milton Gould, had said that Casey intended to testify truthfully and honestly and fully, Casey was suddenly struck by a seizure that threw him to the floor in his office as the director of the CIA. They hustled him off to the hospital, opened up his brain, and removed the part of his brain that controls speech.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, they took out Broca's region. That is the temporal part. It's right above and behind, right above and inside, you know, left ear. And they took out Broca's region. And, you know, in the mob, they cut your tongue out. In the Bush family, they cut your brain out.
Tom, the Bush family is probably one of the most corrupt families going back to Prescott Bush.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Phillips, the Republican. Kevin Phillips did a great job of documenting this. But, Will, let's get to the point here. What's up?
Thank you, Tom. By the way, I have been to Germany 4 times and also Austria and Hungary. You talked about the healthcare over there. You can walk into any doctor's office. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Also, well, here's democracy in America. You can't fire politicians. This was why I called, because what we're going through in Pennsylvania at the moment. In Germany, they're having a referendum. The people there will be able to fire their what's that guy's name? Schroeder.
Yeah. Yeah, Gerhard Schroeder.
In other words, it's a recall.
Right. Well, it's sort of a recall. They have a parliamentary proportional representation system with a parliamentary democracy, and if he gets a vote of no confidence, then they have to hold an election. It's different than here in the United States.
Yeah, like you said, I have, and I agree with you. Bush did not win the election. We have him because one black rogue voted him in.
In 2000, absolutely. And that swing vote, by the way, was Sandra Day O'Connor. Will, thanks for the call and thanks for the point. 1-866-889-8894. Billy in Santa Cruz, California, on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
You're doing a great job, as usual.
Thank you, sir.
The problem, of course,
And thank you for listening, by the way, on KRXA.
KRXA.
AM 540. There you go.
You bet, buddy.
So what's up, Billy? And thanks to Will for listening on WPTT in Pittsburgh, now that I'm giving out call letters here.
That's
so,
right.
Anyhow, what's up?
Well, you know, I still think that there, you know, while there all these conspiracies are going on, if it wasn't for the conspiracy of the media, they wouldn't be able to pull this off. And let me ask you about 2 stories that I don't think are being reported about this Roberts guy. I continue to hear, I live in California, and I constantly hear that, well, you know, it'll be down to a state's rights thing. California doesn't need to worry about abortion and women's right to choose. You know, I live in, you know, well, a month ago they told us that sick people can't smoke pot.
Right.
Wasn't that a states' rights thing?
Yeah, it was. See, they use states' rights when it serves their purposes. They ignore states' rights when it doesn't. That's the bottom line.
Here's my point.
These guys are not ideologically pure, Billy, and you know it. They're hypocrites.
We know they're evil. I want to talk about the media for a second. Sure. Here's my point, that none of the pundits, nobody gets on and says, when the guy says, well, California will be, nobody says, well, wait a minute, and then says, points out that states' rights aren't inviolate, that, in fact, this administration, and if they're willing to do it over pot, they're certainly going to do it over life.
Yeah, well,
they're going to call us murderers, and they're not going to allow it.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And in fact, what the reality is, what they're trying to do when they talk about this stuff, when they talk about states' rights, is they're trying to roll us back to pre-Civil War, because the Civil War was a major turning point in the evolution of the Constitution of the United States, with the amendments, 13th, 14th, and 15th amendments that came to the Constitution immediately after the Civil War. We went from a weak federal government and strong states pre-Civil War to a strong federal government and weak states post-Civil War. The fundamental nature of the relationship between the federal government and the states changed as a result of the Civil War and those three amendments to the Constitution after it. And you know, these guys can't repeal the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. They can't do it.
And one more relationship has changed for the worse, and that is the relationship between politics and religion. And this guy is a Catholic. And if you remember, in our last election, the host was denied to the presidential candidate. People were told if they
you're talking about John, yeah, by the host, you're talking about communion, and the candidate you're talking about is John Kerry, and you realize that the suggestion, the letter that went out
Andrew
to the American...
Ratzinger.
That's right, exactly, from the guy who's now the Pope.
So my question to you is this. If you were a believing Catholic, and you were being told that you were facing eternal damnation if you defended the rights of women, don't we need to ask him that question directly? Do you believe in eternal damnation, and will you still, in the face of that, protect women's rights? Let's ask him that question.
Yeah, it sounds like a plan, Billy. Sounds like a plan. Thanks for the call. Good talking with you. It's 10 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Transforming the world by revitalizing, yes, revitalizing democracy in America.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
You get your fill to eat, but always keep that hunger. May you never take one single breath for granted. God forbid love ever leave you empty-handed.
And welcome back, my friends. 4.5 minutes before the hour, I'm Tom Hartman. Our number 1-866-889-8894. And Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom. It's so rare that I disagree with you, but I disagree with you on Bobanovich. Voinovich.
Uh-huh.
He let Bolton out of committee.
Right, I understand.
If he had stopped it there, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
But see, he couldn't stop it there. He really couldn't. You've got to understand how tightly this party, this Republican Party, controls its own people. He couldn't have stopped it there. It would have been the end of his political career. And
well, wouldn't that have been too bad?
Well, I am convinced.
Because his political career beats.
You know, okay, Roy, I'll give you that. I'll give you that. But I'm saying what he. I'm sure that the rationale that was going through his mind, and I don't, you know, it's very hard for me to defend a Republican. But I'm sure that the rationale that was going through his mind was that the opportunity to do good in his position over a period of time was more important than stopping John Bolton, and that if he gave the speech he gave, that would stop him. And it did. They were not able to get enough votes to overcome a filibuster, so he did stop John Bolton.
And, so now they go around it.
So Bush just says, hey, I don't care what Voinovich says. I don't care what anybody else says.
I'm the dictator. It's a lot easier that way.
Yeah, there you go.
And one other quick point, as they have done the reframe to talk about the global struggle against extremism.
Yeah.
Every time anybody hears the word struggle, they ought to remember that the definition of jihad is struggle.
Oh, you're right. I had forgotten. The literal translation of the word jihad is struggle.
Jihad is struggle.
And in fact, it actually means
jihad.
Internal struggle. Yeah, it actually in the Quranic sense, in the mystical sense, the word jihad means the struggle that we all have between our lower nature and our higher nature. Oh, that's amazing. Roy, thanks a lot for pointing that out.
You bet. Have a great one.
Yeah, you too. Wow. Amazing. Oh, my. Well, another day. Hope you're having a great Monday. And you can get out there and get active. Call 1-877-SOB-USOB and let your senator, let one of your senators, let both of your senators, let your member of Congress or somebody else's member of Congress or senator, particularly if they're the head of a committee, know what you think about what's going on. 1-877-SOB-USOB, toll-free number for Congress. Send them letters. Get out there. Participate. Check out impeachbush.org. for information on the big gig coming up September 24th in Washington, D.C. We'll see you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.